Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
I certainly do love our land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the voice of the EDL. And the co-host of the show this evening is our very own Kel Fritzy, a.k.a. Red Fox Blogger tonight, a.k.a. My Girl Friday. And good to see you this evening, Kel.
Hello, Jeff. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening. Good to have you here this evening.
It's always good to be here.
Say, you stopped me in my tracks there. I was just totally gone out of my mind what I was going to say.
What you
also,
like?
What am I like? Oh, no. Anyway, I've just noticed he looks, oh, my goodness me, he's got a bow tie on tonight. He's got a new bow tie, and it's very own. And I didn't see him come through the cat flap tonight. He's very, very quiet. He done a stealth-like thing coming through the cat flap tonight. And, of course, that's our very own Cat Strangler 101, Mr. Tim Burton. Good evening, Tim. Good to have you on the show this evening.
Yeah,
hope
yeah.
You're well.
Good evening. Good evening, Jeff, and good evening, Kel.
Tim, I don't know what's going on there, but you're pretty sleek. You must be getting a lot of workouts.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I've been...
tonight, Tim, you are Fizzy's best friend. This is the...
Oh,
as
yeah.
you know, you always get a nickname, don't we? So you're Fizzy's best friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm pleased to announce that the essay that I was talking to you about yesterday has been picked up in a couple of places and published. So I'm really quite pleased
Absolutely.
About it.
Well, are we surprised? No, we're not, Tim.
So as soon as Fizzy gets to hear about it, he's gonna be so pleased, because I just know that he's waiting for that essay to hit his inbox with a loud clunk, so that he'll oh, that's that essay from my friend Tim, he'll say to himself, and he can have a nice weekend reading about it. It's only
no,
like
Tim. I hope you don't mind them. But the thing that he won't be quite as polite as what you're saying. It'll be Infidel Kufar. That's more like it, Tim. Come on, we live in the real world.
Well, yeah. I mean,
Allah Akbar. He'll be giving it loud, yeah. Shouting out the window, top of his voice.
Allah Snackbar. Yeah, that's right. So. Well, yeah, I mean, he's going to be he probably will have a few things to say about it, but you know, there you go. It's all part of the cut and thrust of the wonderful multicultural society that we live in. You know, a bit of give and take. You know,
they seem to take, didn't they, Tim? Let's be honest. That's what we see. We give, we tolerant, and they slap it up, and they you know, it's the old saying, take an inch, they take a yard. These people take a mile, you know. They take the piss.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all very uncompromising. In fact, I was briefly reminded of that today, because I was writing an article for another online magazine. I'm only going to just touch on this briefly, because it's not a huge story. It just illustrates just how uncompromising Islam really is. And there's this group of British Muslims who are trying their very best to dispel the negative stereotypes of Muslims that these pesky non-Muslims seem to have of Islam. And they formed a group called the Honesty Policy. And well, all right, you laugh, mate. You laugh. You laugh. All right. And what they did is they filmed a group of British Muslim girls dancing to this tune called Happy. Okay, and you might think, well, wow, that's really great, you know, British Muslims dancing away, they're just like normal people on the inside, you might think. Unfortunately, the video didn't go down very well, and there's an awful lot of hardline Muslims out there who are on the warpath over it, because obviously
it's Muslim girls, isn't it? Music.
It is haram.
Yeah.
I actually wrote this in my article, and I said, it's all very well trying to put forward these initiatives, but Islamic ideology is completely uncompromising. As far as Islamic ideology is concerned, music is haram. It's a tool of shaitan, the devil, and music is the devil's way of tempting you away from worshipping the creator. And that's it, mate. There's no compromise. You know, it doesn't even matter if it's the Bee Gees or ABBA or anything like that. It's all haram.
Yeah. It is all haram. That's it, Tim.
Bee Gees,
that's why I laughed when you said
staying alive.
Not in there, right? Staying
alive.
Staying dead. Staying dead. Blowing up.
Yes.
And Jeff, we have the final panelist joining us right now, and that is AGG the Hairy.
Yes. Ag the Hairy. Good evening, Mr. Ag the Hairy.
Yo, who's that?
Yo, you pick up the phone.
Hello?
Who's that?
Oh, we love that, don't we, Kel? Good to have you here, Ag.
You know I love my little sound bites.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, good evening.
I'm in on the phone because VTR is choosing to be a not very cooperative website. I'm not going to use the other Americanisms. I would for it, but you know, for everyone in the chat room and everything, I won't be able to see a thing you say. So use this opportunity to just trash me all you want, guys. This is your day. I don't want to say hello to the lovely Kel, the lovely Tim, and the lovely Jeff. This is a lovely day to be an infidel.
Yes, it's certainly
It's always a lovely day to be an infidel around here, especially on a Friday.
TGIF, babies.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yes,
so
what
we got
to have us all here this evening.
So what we got going on today?
My goodness me, what have we got going on today? We've got lots of things going on.
Well, you know, there's always something going on that we can dissect, but I'm very excited about Tim's latest article, and I have it right here. I'm going to put it in the chat room for everybody. From the New English Review, and very excited about it. And Tim, you're really pushing the envelope with this one.
Well, yeah,
somebody's
got to. I think the thing is that if Fiaz Fizzy Bollocks, as I like to call him now, if old Fizzy Bollocks hadn't made such a spectacle of himself, then he'd probably never have heard of me. This is the thing that he spends. It's obviously playing on his mind, because he wrote this blog entry on his blog, and it was all about little old inoffensive me, and he went on and on for pages and pages. So he's obviously not happy, but he's only got himself to blame, because if he hadn't gone, if he hadn't done what he had in terms of his fraudulent and mendacious activities with his Tell Mama website, manipulating the figures in order to obtain taxpayers' money under false pretenses, if he hadn't done all that and been caught with his fingers in the till and been reported by Andrew Gilligan of the Daily Telegraph, he probably would never have heard of me. I mean, all I have done is express my displeasure. And when he looked into who it was that was actually causing all this trouble and found it was little old me, he thought he could teach me a lesson by having me charged by the Crown Prosecution Service. And, of course, you've got to remember, of course, there's absolutely no conflict of interest at all. Just because old Fizzy Bollocks happens to sit on a board that advises the Crown Prosecution Service on what sort of cases they should prosecute and what sort of cases they should not, there's absolutely no conflict of interest there at all. I'd like to be perfectly clear about that. There is definitely no conflict of interest in any way, shape or form,
right,
just because he happens to sit on a board that advises the Crown Prosecution Service.
I'm glad we got that cleared up. Using his powers, though, Tim, basically getting your Twitter account blocked, this, that, and the other. He is using some sort of influential powers of his to do things. And this is the deviousness, what we find within the Islamic world, the way that they do things.
very snidey, and it's a cowardly, the way they do it. I mean, this guy wouldn't want to come up to you and face you and actually have a one-to-one with you, Tim, because he'd go away with his tail between his legs because you'd beat him, you know, with words, not with your fist, but with words, you'd beat him, you know, senseless. Like anybody would with these people.
I'm just putting this baseball bat down as we speak. But, yes, you're absolutely right.
I'd put the shotgun down as well.
Yeah. You're quite right. You're quite right, Jeff. And he has absolutely no defence, no reasonable logical defence to my arguments, and that's why I'm sure he thought he'd be a little bit vindictive and a little bit mean spirited and spiteful by having my Twitter accounts blocked. I mean, it's definitely him that's done it, because the one common factor with all my Twitter accounts, because they're all set up under separate email addresses and so on, and they were all blocked, all five of them were blocked within 24 hours. And what it is, the only common factor is that they have been used to criticise and poke fun at old Fizzy Bollocks. And he's obviously spoken to somebody with the ability to affect Twitter accounts in this way, and every one of them has been suspended, and nobody from
Money
Twitter
talks, doesn't it, Tim? If you know what I mean. Let's be honest.
Just because he's got this OBE, the oversized bloated ego, he uses that as a license to try and get things done to shut down free speech. They cannot, none of these Islamic so-and-sos can refute any of our arguments at all.
No, they cannot. That is obvious.
We speak the truth, and the only thing they can do is to try and shut us down. And
silence is the word, isn't it, Tim?
That's what's behind it. I mean, I'm not particularly concerned about these Twitter accounts, because at the end of the day, if I want to, I can always start up more Twitter accounts and re-establish them in due course. It's not a huge deal for me. But I do wonder, and I'd be very interested to find out if anybody knows, whether any other counter-jihadists or any other conservative patriots have been affected in this way.
Some of them might call into the show, Tim.
That's a really good question. If anybody's out there, please call in and speak with Tim.
Please. Or even
we'd like to know, because we do know this is going on, don't we, Tim?
I mean, even if, ladies and gentlemen, even if you haven't got the time to call in tonight, if you can drop me a line at catstrangler101@gmail.com, catstrangler101@gmail.com, I'd be very interested to know, because I think if we can discern a pattern here of social media being shut down just for expressing anti-Islamic or even anti-Fizzy Bollocks attitudes, I think we all know about it.
I've passed on your information to Michael Corrin and Ezra Levant here in Canada. They're
nice.
Well aware of what went on. But I have something here. I have two clips I'm going to play back-to-back, Jeff, and this is what started it all. So here we go. This is a minute long. So take a listen, and then I have another clip. They'll play back-to-back.
Thank you, Jeff. For example, we receive 4 to 6 cases a day. In the last 48 hours, we received 162 incidences of anti-Muslim prejudice or Islamophobic incidences. So a significant jump in the numbers that we received.
A significant jump, and many people will be surprised that even before this incident, you were seeing incidents of four to six incidents a day. I mean, what kind of incidents are people reporting to you?
Well, they range. They range from generalized abuse to visible Muslims on the street, through to graffiti at mosques, through to a firebomb at a mosque, and then the Braintree incident where an individual had knives and potentially a smoke bomb. So we've got a range of potential incidences here, and some extreme and majority of them not so extreme, but certainly targeted towards Muslim communities. And, you know, I guess in all of this scenario, the individuals who killed Lee said they wanted a war, and we don't want to go down that route, so we're asking for cool and calm heads and people to go about their daily business.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Well, it had to be done, didn't it? So, thank you, Kel. For
you're welcome, Jeff.
That's beautiful, Kel. Thank you.
Absolutely.
But as I said, that tied into exactly what we was discussing as well. So, to Kel, that was bang on.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how we read each other's minds on these issues, isn't it, Kel? It just falls into place.
Hey, I've been hanging out with you for 2 years, dude.
I know. Ladies and gentlemen.
I know what baby wants.
I've got to let our listeners know that tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, 2 years ago was the first broadcast that we done for the. It was at the time the East Anglian's EDL radio show, as you all know, when we started off. I say we progressed, and now we're very inclusive. We are the English Defence League radio show. It's only right that we are the nation's English Defence League radio show. And 2 years on, and my goodness me, Kel, the time has just flown by. And yes, tomorrow, and we'll be doing this. We've got something very special this Sunday. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, we don't normally do a show on a Saturday. So we're going to do this. I think Kirk Hill and a few of the guys have got things lined up for Sunday.
I've
and
got
probably
some
blooper
surprises.
Reels. And, yeah, we're going to have a party, ladies and gentlemen. So, please be here on Sunday. It's prime time for us, most people anyway, the Sunday shows, isn't it, Kel? And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting show, ladies and gentlemen. And I know you, the listeners, and the supporters of the show, will love to be there and show us our support as usual. And I know you're going to enjoy it. It's a bit of fun, bloopers. Kel, would you like to inform the listeners a little bit, just a little bit, of maybe some things that might be happening this Sunday? Maybe you'd like to.
Oh, well, we're going to invite callers to call in and congratulate you on your second anniversary, of course. And I'm going to share a few stories. Not to give too much away, but when Jeff first started doing the show, he didn't even know he had a chat room.
I didn't.
And he had this one blurry little slide.
Oh, don't. It's true. Ladies and gentlemen, Kelly's so right. I mean, I was so, so new. I was so green. But
I still said your very first show. Hi, am I on?
I know. It was so. I feel rather embarrassed. Ladies and gentlemen, I've gone red because I know what it was like. You know when you can just switch back and you remember how nervous you was, and don't want to do things wrong when things was going wrong, and then cut myself off, put the phone down, and had to call back. It was hilarious, ladies and gentlemen. But that's it. We all start somewhere. I mean, I know the producer and co-host of the show, she was speaking for 18 minutes on one of the debuts, and she was muted. She muted herself, so we all do it.
Oh, I know. Yeah, my second show. Yeah, when I started the Red Fox Blogger, my very second show, I forgot to unmute myself, and so people were listening to, like, 14 minutes of silence.
That's why it's just how you start from.
thank God I have two brothers who are whizzes at computers, because I was speaking to my one brother. I said, Shane, I don't this, help, and he came over and he helped me install Audacity and got me all fixed up. But it was a nightmare for me too.
Audacity,
absolutely, it was worse I was worse than you, Jeff.
that's got to say something. Now, Kel, I don't believe that because, I mean, it was... Well, as I say, it was a debut show. It was the pilot show of the radio shows, and we just went from strength to strength. After that, we hit the road running literally, and we've continued. And I'm very proud to be part of this this great show of ours with great people. You know, the with our panel, with Tim, yourself, Kel, and Mr. Agador and everybody that's associated with what we do, everybody in the chat room that continues support. It's just an awesome journey that we're all travelling down together. This is it. We're all in this together. Of course, you know, we got stories here. This is the thing about this show, and like a lot of the shows, it's on Blog Talk Radio. These stories don't go away. We get new stories every day turn up. And this is the whole thing about Islam. This is why we're here, while we're discussing these issues, because it's so, so important. Mm-hmm. That we're fed up with politicians trying to brush things under the carpet and say it's not really happening, it's nothing to do with Islam, and we've heard this from certain parties out there, and it just infuriates us and try to make as though we're stupid or something. We know exactly what's going on, and we will speak out against these issues that's affecting our country. It's affecting future generations, and we can't allow that to happen. We want our future generations to have the same freedoms. What they're trying to take away from us now, we're going to fight for the future generation. That's what we're here for, and that's what we will continue to do, won't we, guys? This is why we're here. And so there you go. But anyway, I thought would like to just mention that, yes, as I say, 2 years tomorrow will be the first time I actually broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, this great great place to be. So and I'm as nervous now as I was then.
you know what? I have to admit, though, that you actually did take off running out of the gate and haven't looked back since. It is absolutely fantastic, the show that you do, Jeff. Oh, absolutely. And I just want to apprise people of a few programming notes for today is that, of course, Wahhabi will be joining us in about 8 minutes. And then after the music break, we're going to take that at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to be discussing some issues out of the United States, and Agador is going to be instrumental in dissecting that one. And then at 5.05 p.m., my time, 10.05 p.m.,
Use your toes, Kel.
I literally counted my fingers. We're going to have Moving Forward joining us to share some news out of Iran. So there you go.
Absolutely fantastic. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what to look forward to on tonight's show. Because we have got someone else calling, and of course it's Firefox Online, our very own George. Bring him on very shortly. George, I just want to mention, today I was talking to Ivan, who used to be sort of an RO for the East Anglians, and he used to inform me, and Jim informed me as well, that Hayden, Edil Minks' son, had an operation today. He informed me, and I think it was probably about 15 minutes when I spoke to him, that he was having the operation. So I hope it's all gone well, Edil Minks and the family. And, my thoughts and prayers are with Hayden, and hoping for a speedy recovery. But I thought I'd like to give that a mention, because a lot of our listeners probably was wondering how things was going, and he's had an operation today, guys, and we will keep you informed of Hayden's progress, his recovery, aren't we, Kel?
We are so thinking of Hayden. He is such a beautiful young lad, and that he going down to theater again today for a second operation. He is stable, but he's in pain, and you know, we're thinking of his mummy and daddy, and we're thinking of his siblings, and his little sister is missing him terribly.
Yeah, I bet so, yeah. He's such a lovely, bubbly lad. And, yes, Edil Minks and family, you know, we're all thinking of you and the family and, of course, of Hayden. And, you know, hopefully it'll be, I know he's in a little bit of pain at the moment, but hopefully in a short time he'll be on a road to recovery. Just thought to see that little smiling face of his and his cheerfulness is very much an inspiration to a lot of people, isn't he, young Hayden is, so bless him. But there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I just wanted to inform our listeners to the situation there, Kel. So,
absolutely, Jeff, absolutely. He's one of ours, so, and this is what the EDL is all about. We're a family, and we all take care of our own, don't we, Jeff?
We most certainly do, Kel. We most certainly do. I was wondering, because before we have Wahibi calling in. Wahibi. I'm terrible. I feel what I like.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. I know, Tim. I'm getting there.
Yeah, there's only a few dozen more vowel combinations to get through, and you'll definitely be there.
Oh, you said
there,
vowel
Jeff.
Combinations for a minute there, Tim.
Well, then you have to have the Welsh translation, of course.
Uh-huh.
That'd be about 16 more consonants, but
Yeah, I love Welsh. The only problem with Welsh is that after somebody Welsh has been talking to you, you have to wash all the spit out of your hair because of the...
Oh, Tim. Don't forget, we got Welsh listeners, Tim. You can't be...
We love you guys in Wales. Awesome.
My apologies to our Welsh listeners. God bless you. Wacky, 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 whatever they call.
Hey, listen, I'm from Texas, and I make fun of my own Texas accent all the time. So, you know, it's all good fun together.
All good,
my
all
goodness
green.
Me, we're
at Wales
invading us now, Tim. What you like?
Oh, boy, oh, you can't go around telling jokes like that.
Oh. No, we love you all, guys. Don't take offense.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the... The last episode of the English Defence League radio show.
We've gone truly international, World War IV is about to begin. Thank you.
But you know what, Jeff? There is somebody here with whom we can have a word with, and this.
Hey, it's Mr. Wahibi from Spongistan. Good evening, Wahibi.
Oh, hello, Jeff and Infidel Inquisition panel. This is Wahibi from Spongistan. Spongistan, we are sponsored from you, and you stand for it, and we love you. So I have news from Spongistan. It's been a long time I talked to your show, your... Friday show, and I have lots of news from the Spongistan for you.
Wow. We've been waiting for some, latest updates from Spongistan. So, yes, please go ahead, Mr. Wahibi.
Yes, but first I will congratulate everyone for listening to Jeff for 2 years in his bad English. Good luck on your Sunday show. So, news from Spongistan is we participated in America in Washington, D.C. at the counter demonstration. Many good halal food vendors were there. Everyone had a good time. I do have some bad news about it, though. One of the food vendors was illegal. He was selling a beverage. He asked me if I want tequila sunrise drink. I said, what is that? And he said it had tequila juice of orange and grenadina, like a cherry something. I said, no, that is haram. I cannot drink that. So, but then he asked me if I wanted to drink cold tequila sunset. And I said, oh, my, you talk to Tim Burton. That is not funny to you. So, and I said, what is in tequila sunset drink? And many, many bad things. And maybe when I have more time, I tell you. But now we have made an issue at the United States about tequila sunset.
You know what? I bet that drink is...
And Tim Burton, everything, they're big news about this later. So.
I bet that drink is really fizzy.
Yes, yes.
Fizzy.
So the next thing is... yes, I'm sorry. Maybe you go talk, you talk.
Well, there you go. Well, that's very surprising. But so he's trying to sell you a drink called Tequila Sunrise, and it's as I say, very much in Tim's part of the woods there that this drink come about by the sounds of it. Would you not say,
oh,
maybe?
Yeah.
It's something to do.
The Tim Burton fizzy drink.
So I know it is true. Tim Burton talked to this man just to approach Ambassador from Spongistan. We have proof, and we will tell about it later. So, but Tim Burton is good for you. Ha ha! See, you get me. So
absolutely fascinating.
Well, yes.
Some of the things that you brought to the table tonight, what's the other further developments in Spongistan? You said you had a few things that you want to discuss this evening, so go ahead.
Yes, I have two more things for your listeners today. Next thing is I lost my youngest wife at a demonstration in America, diplomatic arrangement made to make it okay. What happened is she met a park policeman on a motorcycle, Harley Davidson, and went with him. And this is very personal, but it is okay because, you know, that it's okay because I have a good deal from it, so I tell you.
You got a good deal
from
it.
Park policeman, he took wife, she ran away. We made a deal with American President Barack Obama, with other world leaders like David Chameleon Man in the UK. And we talked, we said that they must make Guantanamo Bay a nursing home for warriors of jihad, and that will happen in a few months.
Well,
in Guantanamo Bay.
Well, that's a bit of a shock, isn't it? So they're going to make create a jihad nursing home for, you know, beleaguered jihad warriors. Is that right?
They will release all Spongistan prisoners from Guantanamo, and they will make jail home for warriors of jihad. Nice hospital, good vacations. Place for them.
Now, Mr. Wahabi, let me ask you a question.
That is quite the mind-blowing news.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Wahabi. Will this be next door to the retirement home for suicide bombers?
I understand that's a rather small building,
but you know, so I'm guessing that there's a lot of room on the property. I'm just wondering if it's going to be next door.
I can't answer your question for you. But last thing is, we in Spongistan had legal permit in Washington to get demonstrate on the Washington Mall, and infidels do not have permit. They are illegal because, you know, friend of Spongistan works in the park police office and delayed the permit for them. So... good for us and bad for them. Yes.
Yeah, we expect you to say that. Absolutely fascinating news that you brought. I suppose this retired home for the GAs, maybe the place would be called Tequila on the Rocks or something like that, the name of the place. Yes.
Just good for you. This is what happened here from a Spongeston. We sponge from you, and you stand for it, and we love you. Good night, Evie.
Thank you so much for taking part on the show this evening. Hope to see you next week. Oh, Evie, God bless you, brother.
Good night, Wahabi.
Absolutely fascinating, as usual. Ladies and gentlemen, that was, Mr. Wahabi from Spongeston. And the famous slogan of his is, how's it go, Tim? We sponge from you, you
we
take
we,
it.
We sponge from you, and you stand
you
for
stand
it.
Stand for it. And
that's
we love you.
And we love you.
And we love you.
Absolutely. It's always great to take that guy's call.
But
did
George,
you like that?
We have George of Firefox News online, and I think he's got a little news that he would like to share.
Awesome. Welcome, George.
Excuse
me
there, folks.
I've
got to go get the master. He's standing in... What's that, sir? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you too well with this bad ear of mine. What are you saying?
Get away from my microphone, you putz!
Oh, sorry, sir. Here's the master.
Good grief. Igor, I keep telling you, never, never, ever sit in my office chair. Every time you sit in my office chair, you always she always shift the dents for my tushy. Now, don't do that no more. Sheesh. Hi, guys and gals and kids of all ages.
Hey, George, welcome.
Hi, George. How
are
you doing tonight?
I am doing absolutely ecstatic. I am doing absolutely ecstatic. Last night, I had the most incredible interview of my blog talk career. I mean, we are talking a true patriot here in the United States.
Wow.
Colonel
was,
Harry Riley
and
of
I was
Operation
Rachel,
American
George,
Springs.
I was right
guest
there. That was fascinating.
Yeah. He was Colonel Riley of Operation American Spring was my guest in the first hour. And let me tell you something. It was a bit laid back as far as the interview goes, but it was the most incredible and informative interview I've had of all the interviews I've done in the 6+ years I've been on the air. And I'll tell you something.
That's amazing.
I'm going to have him back. He's coming back on May 26th. He's coming
absolutely
back this coming month.
Absolutely brilliant, George.
So I invite you,
one of those
Jeff,
classic
make it,
interviews,
all of
yes.
You. So please, drop on by. And by the way, I encourage you, if you haven't heard the interview, do tune into it because in archives because it's a really fantastic interview. And I'm also including it on YouTube once it finishes editing. I've been waiting for this to – let me check here. File not found. File not found. File
yeah,
not
yeah,
found.
Yeah, yeah, the story
oh,
of my life.
Don't do that to me. I hate when that
well, yeah, but absolutely fascinating, George. As I say, it's one of those interviews that stays with you. You know, laid back. Because you know, on our show, we like to, you know, when we have a guest on, we don't sort of use like an interview technique as such. We just let people come on and you know, chill out and you know, and then we just chat about things in general and talk about some of the important issues maybe that you know, the reason why we wanted the people on the show. That's what we tend to do, and it seemed like you've done something very similar yourself, George, and looked like you had a very good show there. So well done to you, brother. Well done.
It was really, really good. George, you really knocked that one out of the park.
Well, I first of all, I understand Jeff, EDL is celebrating an anniversary of its own. 2 years, am I correct? 2 years on the air?
You were right, George.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2 years. It's just amazing. Thank you, George. thank you. It's just been a, it's like being just a roller coaster ride, hasn't it? And it, you know, Carol, it's just been an amazing journey with great people, meeting great people like yourself, George. You know, people like Vito, Espedito, the Radio Jihad Network, people like Hold Your Awakens, the people that that I've met since you know, being you know, part of the Blog Talk Radio family has been absolutely amazing.
Jeff,
and
I
really
wish I could have been here
forward
from the
to
beginning.
The future. Yeah,
I wish I could have been here from the beginning with you, but in the short time I've been
especially
coming to your show,
especially the first episode.
Yes. And by the way, Jeff, don't let me tell you something. Your first episode, you think you had it rough? Brother, I sympathize. Believe me, I do. I sat here, well, not here where I am now, but where I did the very first show. I was taking care of a parent with Alzheimer's at the time, and I was so nervous because there was a lot going on at the time, but I was so nervous, I actually sat here, and I had the mute button on my phone, and I'm sitting here going, hey, everybody, how you doing? Glad to have you aboard. Listen, the show is called Firefox News Online, what was I saying? Good grief. Oh, for crying out loud, hit the button, George. And, of course, I had to start it all over again. And then, for some stupid reason, I hit the mute button on the switchboard, and I'm like, okay, do we have a brain in our head? And believe me when I tell you, it's the little things on that very first episode, that very first show that you always remember. And one thing that I will say to you, Jeff, host to host, is this: enjoy this ride. It is, because the one thing that we get out of doing shows like ours each and every time we do them is we don't do it for ourselves. Mm-mm. We do it for all the people who tune in, for all of the people that listen, that come on board and contribute. You know, I've been blessed to have my lovely Canadian goddess Kel back on my podcast on Sunday to do the Jihad Report. And she's such a wonderful person, and I'm so glad to have her. But
George,
thank you so very much. I feel the same. I've got to echo the same sentiments myself. You know, right from the beginning, Kel was there. I mean, even with my blurry slides, Kel said, we're going to sort this out. We're going to sort this out. And and I still
but
don't,
we are going
I
to have a lot
have
of fun, George,
in.
On Sunday. Absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. We've got sound clips. I'm terrifying Jeff because he doesn't know what I have.
Ooh, she's going to sneak in some sound clips that I don't know about.
Hey, Igor,
we had a blooper the
Igor,
first year, didn't we, Kel? It was fantastic.
Ready, hold on a second, everybody. What's that, Igor?
I'm sorry, sir, but I threw out your tickle feather, sir. It was tickling me nose, and I was sneezing all night.
Well, then go out to the barn, go in and go to the chicken, go up by the chicken coop, and get me another one.
What way, sir? What was it you wanted?
Never mind. And people say,
Comedy
fun.
Central tonight, isn't it, guys? And we, as I say, George, this is what we really look forward to Friday evenings. When, you know, it's a little bit special time that we found over the time that people really enjoy what we do in the Friday nights. It's totally off the wall, and of course we have fun, but at the same time. We do get down to some, you know, there might be some serious issues out there. We still carry on like we normally do.
Yeah, we do. And we have a topic that we're going to discuss. But, Jeff, I think you're ready to call back in.
Kel, Chet, this is what I'm, ladies and gentlemen, this is what I'm saying about having great people around me. I'm just about, you know, my call's just about to, I've got to recall back in. So, Kel, once again, thank you so much for a big heads up there. And yes, Kel, I'm going to pass it back to you, and then we'll be back in a couple of minutes, because I know you've got something a little bit special here at the moment, Kel.
I do. I have a song here, and I think this is actually a very pretty song. It's called Heaven Coming Down by the Tea Party, and we'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes. Welcome back, everybody, and we're waiting for Jeff to get back here. You are listening to the EDL Radio Show, and I am Kel Fritzy, Jeff's producer and co-host. Your host is Jeff Mitchell. we want to thank people joining us, and we want to thank people in the studio first and foremost, and that's our panelists. That would be, of course, our very own Cat Strangler 101, who is Tim Burton, and, of course, Ecuador. We want to thank Firefox News Online. Of course, that is George joining us in the studio. But we also want to acknowledge the people that are gracing our chat room. That is Bigfoot. That is EDL Migs, Eric Kyle. We have numerous guests joining us right now as well. We have Has Questions, Moving Forward, Porky Steve, Danger 73, and Dito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. And we've got the boss back. Hey, boss, welcome back.
Thank you, Kel. I don't know why, but sometimes when I call back in, I have to call back about two or three times before it connects. So my apologies to the listeners. That's just a little technical issue that
you don't need to apologize. You got the co-hostess with the mostest.
Co-hostess, yes, most certainly. But as I say, very interesting first part of the show this evening, and discussing different things, and I do know that we have got a topic that we want to be discussing this evening as well, isn't there, Kel? There's a topic that
and there's a reason why I'm bringing this particular topic up, and I'm sure people who are within the counter jihadist movement is familiar with this story by now, and this is from the New York Post, in which a man killed his wife for making the wrong supper. Now, he's a Pakistani immigrant, and he beat his wife to death in their Brooklyn home in New York, ladies and gentlemen, in the USA, after she made the mistake of cooking him lentils for dinner instead of the hearty meal of goat meat that he craved. And this is according to court papers, Jeff. His name is Noor Hussein. He's 75 years old. He was so outraged over the vegetarian fare that he pummeled his wife, Nazar Hussein, who was 66, with a stick until she was a bloody mess. And this is according to the court documents. Now, the defendant asked his wife to cook goat, and his wife said she made something else. So he went into a rage and beat her to death. Now, the conversation got louder, and his wife disrespected the defendant by cursing at the defendant and saying, motherfucker, and defendant. He took a wooden stick and hit her with it on her arm and mouth. Now, defense attorney Julie Clark admitted Hussein beat his wife, but argued that he is guilty only of manslaughter because he didn't intend to kill her. In Pakistan, Clark said, beating one's wife is customary. Now, I'm going to get to the gist of this because we're going to go somewhere with this in a minute, Jeff. He comes from a culture where he thinks this is appropriate conduct, where he can hit his wife. This is what Clark said in her opening statements at their Brooklyn Supreme Court bench trial. He culturally believed he had the right to hit his wife and discipline his wife. Now, prosecutors, however, said Hussein meant for his wife to die. His intentions were to kill his wife, and this is being argued by Assistant District Attorney Sabiha Madni. And she also carried on to say in court, this was not a man who was trying to discipline his wife. But I'm going to stop the article right there, and my reason for wanting to bring this up is because they're arguing back and forth in court. One is saying that, well, you know, it's the culture. And the other one is arguing, well, he wasn't really disciplining her. He killed her. So that's not discipline. And so, Jeff, my question to the panel, and I'm going to let you answer first, is, well, actually, no, you know what I'm going to do, Jeff? Seeing as I brought this topic up, I actually wanted to ask Agador first. Agador, this is in the United States of America. This is being argued in a court of law. They are going back and forth with the ideology of culture and discipline. And how does that make you feel when these stories cross your desk in your very own country, the United States of America?
Well, it's kind of funny in a sad way. You know, I mean, I heard George expressing shock. You know, no one should express shock at this. This is Islam, and this happens all over the world. It's just this one happened to pop up in the United States, and there'll be more if something isn't done. Now, let's be clear what was done here. What was done here was not discipline. It may be that way in Pakistan or, you know, Slobovia or wherever these people come from, but they're in the United States of America now. First, it was assault. And you can argue that, you know, the wooden stick might even be considered a deadly weapon. That's what it was first. Then when the woman died, it became murder. And that is the only way this should be looked at. Forget multiculturalism. Forget political correctness. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that this man came from a different culture. He is in the United States of America now. His culture should suborn itself to the larger American culture. Yeah, sorry about that, lefties, but that's the way it has to go. And he should obey our laws. And if he doesn't, he should be punished. He is a wife beater and a murderer. Forget the cultural niceties. Back to you.
Well, and the thing is, he's also a coward. She lipped it back, and that happens. Believe me, you don't want to be married to a Matt Fox because
I can't believe that.
But he's a coward. He brutally attacked her while she was sleeping in her bed, and he left very deep lacerations on her head, arms, shoulders, causing her brain to hemorrhage. She was a bloody mess. She was sleeping, and he came in. See, this is why I have an issue with the manslaughter charge, because they had their little Donnybrook. He went to bed, and he came in later with the intention of causing grievous harm. I think that his intention was to kill her, and I think it was first degree. Thus, I don't agree with the manslaughter charge.
And yes, my dear, is what we call in the States, murder in the first degree. It is murder with the intent to murder. Manslaughter, it is not.
Yeah.
It's still got to be proved, though, isn't it? That's the case. It's still being argued.
It's a statement of fact. I mean, the court papers have already determined that this is the events that took place that night, and that they had a fight because she cooked the wrong meal, and she stormed off, and she went to bed, and he came in afterwards and slaughtered her. That's a statement of fact.
Well, are we surprised that these things go on? We know the brutality. We know that husbands are allowed to be. It ordains them to in the Quran. there's a text there, and probably Tim, about the beating part.
You're talking about Quran chapter 4 verse 34, which includes the permission for a husband to beat his wife in case of disobedience. It's not exactly specified how he should beat her. There are some Islamic authorities who say you're supposed to use a toothbrush or possibly a small stick. As you know, if anybody has listened to my dodgy fatwa tune, then the preferred tool is a baseball bat. But leaving that aside, the permission for a husband to beat his wife is too often interpreted throughout the Islamic world as a license to beat them to death, and that's actually what happens in a lot of cases. But Agador and Kel are quite right. First of all, Kel, when she says it is first-degree murder under those circumstances, it's premeditated, he didn't do it in the heat of the moment, it's not manslaughter, it is murder, and as Agador said, it doesn't matter what his culture said was okay. If he chooses to come and live in the United States, then he has to abide by all the laws of the country that he's chosen to live to. He can't pick and choose them. And we say it is murder under those circumstances. So that's it. It's all cut and dry. There shouldn't really be any argument about that at all.
Now, my concern, of course, is sorry, Jeff.
No, go ahead, Kel.
My concern is that he will receive a more lenient sentence because of the cultural issues. But what Agador said too, look, they emigrated from Pakistan to the United States, and that he was not addressing the laws of the land, and we know that within the realm of Islam, they do not recognize man-made laws. He took it upon himself to come to the United States and carry on with the brutality which is found in regions like Pakistan, Syria in particular. And I am outraged. As a woman, I'm totally outraged, Jeff, because you know what? This sets a precedent, I think. If we do not start cracking down on these cultural differences, multiculturalism is a fail. It's not working. If they do not crack down on this, I'm next. And I don't care what anybody says. It won't be at the hands of my husband, of course, but it could be at the hands of a Muslim with whom I took offense to maybe a pithy comment I made in a shopping mall or on in the bank lineup or anything like that. And all of a sudden, I'm going to be subject to Islamic cultural differences because this is wrong. We have to stop this, and this is why I have such a strong stance with Islam, because I am a woman, and the subjugation of women in Islam, it's horrifying. I mean, they bury them chest high and throw rocks at them for crying out loud because they were raped by three other men. They were gang raped, and they're the ones that get buried up to their chest. We've got women right now that are jailed because they married a Christian, and they're being forced to convert back to Islam. And Islam is dangerous. It's poison. And this is what we can expect in the West unless we get a real grip on it. We have people like Noor Hussein. He's 75 years old, and he's beaten his wife to death while she's sleeping in her bed, and they're calling it manslaughter. Now, I know that Has Questions brought up a really good point in the chat room, and that he said that slapping the second-degree murder charge is easier to prosecute than a first-degree murder charge. And Has Questions is right, because it is probably easier to obtain a conviction. But all the same, why are we tolerating this? And I implore you, like Ecuador, this is the United States of America. Tim, this is happening in the UK. Jeff, this is happening in the UK. And me, this is happening in Canada.
Let me just say something. Let me just say something really quickly, guys. Sorry, Jeff. Let me say something real quick. You know, and I want whenever I talk about these things, I always appeal to progressives. Okay, any progressives that are listening to this, you guys were at the tip of the spear when it's come to women's rights fights for the past 100 years. Now this is going on in your face, and you're being told by your governments. In the United States, in the UK, in Australia, in Canada, you're being told by your governments that you, as champions of women's rights, have to put up with this stuff, that women have to be sacrificed in the name of multiculturalism. Now, it is up to you to tell your side, who are promulgating these things, no. It is up to you to say you have to get a rein on Islam. And depower them, de-index them as a religion, and tell them that this culture of abuse of women has to stop. It'll only stop when you wake your asses up. Back to you guys.
What can I say? Agador, that was very well said, and I couldn't agree more. And, you know, listening to the discussion that we're having, you know, the thing that comes to my mind, and I don't know if other listeners will agree with me, but I'm looking at Islam as it's like against humanity, against, you know, we are a human rights organization. The English Defense League is a human rights organization. We do champion the women in Islam, the children, the abuse that goes on. And this is so widespread throughout Islam. And they make these excuses. This is a cultural thing. Well, this is not. This is acts against humanity, against the women, against children, against total humanity itself. This is why I myself personally think this cult, this ideology should be totally outlawed. I can't see any place, and I think most of you would agree, I can't see any place that this serves its purpose in a modern
world, in a 21st century world. It has no place. It's totally evil. It's deprivation. It is everything that is evil in my mind. And I don't know whether the panel would agree with my statement there. But I can't see any goodness that comes out of Islam whatsoever. The only thing I see is pure and utter evil. That's it. Yeah, that's my turn on my little say on that, guys. So, Kel?
Well, I was wondering what Tim thinks about these issues, and I'm trying to be a little more esoteric than, you know, being a sensationalist with this article, but the damages he created, it's first of all, I don't understand how a person can bludgeon another person to death with a 2x4. I mean, that is frightening. And he was trying to clean up the mess. The blood had splattered all over the place in the bedroom. And then he called his son, and he said, "I killed her. Hurry up and come over." And Madani also said a Pakistani woman who lived in the same building as the Husseins would testify about the beatings Nasser received at the hands of her husband. Now, they have talked about the years of abuse that she suffered, and I think she just had enough and stormed out, went to bed, and he just said, "Well, you know, you're getting rather lippy. I'm going to deal with you." In my opinion, it was protracted, but I do understand why this particular charge was levied. Now, what are we going to do with this guy? I don't know if he's an American national at this point. What are we going to do? We're going to jail a 75-year-old, and what, he's going to finish his life sentence, and we're going to deport him back to Pakistan? Well, first of all, this guy is obviously going to be convicted, and he'll die in prison on our tax dime. Thank you very much, multiculturalism. But, Tim, when you come across this issue, the question I have for you, Tim, is how do we keep our governments accountable to prevent this sort of immigration into the host countries?
Well, I suppose the short answer to that is that any immigration or all immigration from Islamic countries should be stopped absolutely right now, full stop. That's one of the first things that should happen. We have a problem with Islam that is not going to get any better because the demographics, the number of children that Islamic families have, is at the moment a lot higher than the families that indigenous individuals have. If we determine that there is a problem with Islam for the reasons that we always talk about on these shows, then one of the things we should be doing, as Confucius memorably said, is when in hole, stop digging. And the very first thing we should do is to stop Islamic immigration, full stop. Once we've done that, we can then take stock of the problem that we have and do something intelligent about it. I mean, at the moment, our political elites are denying that there is any problem with Islam at all. They're saying that if there's any atrocity that's committed by Muslims, it's nothing to do with Islam, and it should just be treated as an individual criminal matter, and that we should not, under any circumstances, join up the dots and blame Islam for what Muslims do. Well, that has to stop, because Islam is the prime reason that Muslims behave in the way that they do. And we have to, first of all, recognize that. And then we can, once we've recognized it and named Islam as the problem, named it as the enemy, then we can take the appropriate steps that we need to stabilize our societies. But at the moment, we're not even stating that Islam is a problem, let alone the enemy that threatens the annihilation of our civilization. So, yeah, when you have an instance like this where this guy brutally slaughters his wife, although I have to say, you know, I'm not too keen on lentils myself, but I'll let that pass. When you have this kind of situation... all right, I'm being flippant, I shouldn't really, but when you have this kind of situation, there's two things here. One is, as an individual, what should happen to that individual? Well, obviously, he should be convicted of first-degree murder and suffer the penalty. Yes, all right, he isn't immigrant, and that should not affect the justice that is meted out to him for murdering another human being. So it could be argued that if we had applied a more stringent vetting process for immigrants from Islamic countries in the first place, we wouldn't be seeing so much of this over here in the United States and other Western countries. I mean, that is certainly true. But the fact is that in Islam, beating your wife is perfectly acceptable. Killing family members does not carry the penalty that it would over in civilized Western countries, and in particular, killing your children, believe it or not, in Muslim countries carries no penalty whatsoever. It is perfectly permissible to kill your children if you as a parent deem it necessary in Muslim countries. So there's all sorts of reasons why we should not allow Muslims to perpetuate their evils over in Western countries, but we have to start somewhere, and the place we have to start, I think, is to stop further immigration, full stop, from Muslim countries, and then go from there.
Now, my problem with that is my problem with that is that not only do I wholeheartedly agree, but how do we do that? Our politicians won't touch it.
Well, they won't. Sorry, go on.
Oh.
Sorry, Kel. I was just going to say, yeah, at the moment, our politicians won't touch it, and that is a separate problem. But it's quite obvious to me that when you have a deteriorating situation like this, the very first thing you should do is stop making it worse. Confucius, he say, when in hole, stop digging, and that's why I focused on stopping Islamic immigration. How that might be done, we're not going to do it with our current administrations in most, if not all, countries. No, but that is what needs to be done, without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was I was just watching a little bit of TV last night on the news, and they were showing like the things in the papers of following today's paper, and it said like immigration in a spin, you know, it's out of control. Basically, that's, I think it was from the Daily Mail, and so this is the topic that we're talking about, and it was very much provident and what was being spoke about today, like, you know, during the UKIP having a good run on things, that the immigration factor played a big part, and this was talked about a lot, and it's quite obvious that this is a really big issue, and I do believe that it does, as you say, Tim. We've got to have the political will to stop it in its tracks. All this dipping around, the situation, it's out of hand as it is. So, you know, it continues. What are we going to be like in a couple of years from now, even? Just a couple of years. Not 5 years, but a couple of years. If it's in such a state as it is. We need something firm now. We need politicians with a backbone. We need them to say the gates are closed. We're full. This country needs time to cool down, to gather its, you know, to the way that things should be done in this country. Otherwise, you know, all the benefits that people have in this country, it's going to fall apart. This country become bankrupt. It's going to become like a banana republic. And sorry to banana republics out there, but I think the listeners will understand my sentiment there. But that's the situation. We're turning our country into a dumping ground, and this is all goes. This is like a guilt thing, isn't it? This is you know, politicians saying, "Oh, we know this happened, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. You know, colonisations of other nations. You know, it's a bit of a payback." And this is what you get a lot of these leftists saying. This is all
payback.
Thank you. You see, that's it, isn't it, Agador? And this
exactly,
is what you reap, what you sow. And but then again, we've come to a time now, and I think most of us that's listening to this show would agree, something has to be done positively now. We can't, you know, as I say, time is running out. and we're going to have all sorts of issues in this country. This country can become bankrupt. Many other European countries can become bankrupt because of the immigration issues that we've got. This is a surge, and we've got serious issues that needs to be sorted out now. So there you go. That's my views on things. And as you say, we just need to put people in power who's got the balls to do it, Sir Tim and Agador Kel and listeners out there. That's the whole point, you know. But
that deserves
anyway.
An applause right there, Kel, I'd say.
I think you're right, Agador. I think I've got it
Thank
around
you.
This summer.
Thank
but
you.
That was really good. That was beautifully said, so...
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, well, it has to be said, Kel. I mean, we're just ordinary people with serious concerns of what's going on in our countries and our nations. We all feel it. Agador, yourself, Kel, myself, Tim. We know the severity of what's going on in our country. We really, really are trying hard to make the changes. And what can we keep doing? We just got to keep the pressure up on these spineless politicians to change their stance on what they're doing. Because, I mean, what's going to happen down the lines? You know, my great-grandchildren, what's it going to be like for them 20, 30 years from now? You know, it's a scary thing. It's a scary scenario, isn't it? I think you would agree, Tim. It's very worrying, isn't it? If we don't do something, what we're doing, I think we're doing fantastic. I've got to admit, I mean, the world's got its eyes up to exactly what's going on. We've got a lot of support from all over.
Well, yeah, we have a much greater chance of turning this back than I would have said a year or two ago, most certainly. And it is down to, in part, shows like this and the ability to get the word out through the internet, through social media, through Blog Talk Radio, and through committed counter-jihadists like yourself, like Kel, like Agador, like all of us here, and the people who are listening to the show, I'm sure most of them feel exactly the same way, and we do have an opportunity to turn it round, but we have to recognise that we are up against a threat which it's an existential threat to our civilization. And although there are plenty of people on the left who will say, oh, you're exaggerating, there's no threat at all, Islam is benign and tolerant and as Canadian as maple syrup and as English as as English as an oak tree and as American as apple pie. it isn't true. I mean, Islam is none of those things. There is nothing good about Islam, that Islam has nothing to offer humanity when you look at the alternatives. I mean, there might have been the odd day or two back in the 7th century in Arabia when somebody looked at Islam and said, well, maybe this is better than, you know, what we do at the moment, beating our wives to death and having dung for dinner. But, you know, it hasn't really... In, when you're looking at the 21st century, it's got no benefit whatsoever, and the world will be better off without it.
And I want to say to people, Jeff, if you don't mind, I just want to say that when people come at you with this argument that Tim just talked about, you know, that Islam isn't a threat at all, and all of this, and there's no assimilation. Just ask them to, you know, just tell them, you know, look at the Middle East. Look at the picture of the Middle East. How much tolerance is there for other religions in the Middle East? And no, you're not just talking about Christianity. I mean, Buddhism, Hinduism, any other religion. How much tolerance is there in these Islamic-run countries versus countries that are run by their own people? In other words, countries that are not Islamic. You know, if you look at those indices of tolerance, you'll see that yes, it is a problem. It is an existential threat to our Western civilization. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Agador. And something else I'd like to say, that maybe we have some Muslims out there that you think that you can tell us what good this ideology of yours
is
bringing to the world. Maybe you'd like to call in and to address the issues that we're discussing. It's I wait week in, week out for a Muslim to come on the show and to actually explain the goodness and have a discussion about the points that we discuss. And it seems like I've been doing this show for 2 years now, and I've probably had about one Muslim that actually called in. Well, a couple. I mean, we've got Wahibi, but Wahibi is very much part of the show. But I mean, just, you know, we know that they're listening, don't we, guys? We know that. And,
they
listen. I'm pointing out to you guys. You guys out there, you Muslims, you've got something good to say about this ideology. We can't see nothing. But maybe you have got the balls to call into the show and to explain to us and try to alleviate some of the issues that we've been discussing on our shows, previous shows and tonight's show. So there you go. There's an opportunity. You've got probably about 20-odd minutes if you want to call in and discuss some of the issues that we've been discussing about your ideology, your cult. So there you go. That's my challenge to you,
and
the Muslim out there.
We still have George from Firefox News online here, Jeff.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wondering he has an opinion that he would like to share about this topic. And, George, welcome back.
Thanks, Kel.
George.
Thanks, Jeff. You know, I do have an opinion on this. You know, our court systems were set up and designed here in the United States with constitutional laws prevailing. To have this kind of case in the courts, yes, it's a murder case. And personally, they should throw the book at this person. Absolutely. Have him pay for his crimes and charge him with the highest a murder charge available on the books. They should not be pandering to his culture. They should not be pandering to him at all. The simple fact is, if they're pandering to this guy, they're entertaining the possibility of Sharia law being introduced as defense. Excuse me. And that should not and will not be allowed. We cannot have our court systems glutted with their laws when we have our own. And it seems to me that's exactly what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got the same situation in the UK. I mean, a little while ago, wasn't there, Tim, that some parts of Sharia is running alongside the British system. And this was what the solicitors, wasn't they, sorted something out a while ago that was in the courts over it, wasn't it, Tim?
Well, there were a couple of things here about that. There were, for a while there have been Sharia courts that have been operating with the permission of the British government in the UK. I think it was about 85 Sharia courts operating around the country at the last count. There's probably more now. But the Law Society recently started looking at incorporating Sharia provisions into people's wills. And the problem with that, of course, is that you then start setting a precedent and saying, well, in some circumstances, is Sharia going to be allowed to take precedence over British law? Now, the thing to remember about this is that people are entitled to leave their property when they die. They're entitled to leave their property to whoever they want. So, in British law, that is the case. And if you wanted to leave half your property to your eldest son and two quarters, one each to your two daughters, you know, that effectively has the same provision as Sharia law, but you're doing it as part of a British will. But the thing about incorporating or allowing Sharia principles is that where there are no express rules to the contrary. If you start to give Sharia equivalence or superiority over British law, it's the thin end of the wedge. And then a set of circumstances will arise in the future where somebody will make a decision that effectively gives Sharia law a judge will make a decision that effectively gives Sharia law precedence, and that'll start setting the cat amongst the pigeons. Well, I don't care how much they say at the moment, Sharia law will never take precedence over British law. Once you start introducing the concept that Sharia law can have any kind of legal foothold in comparison to British law, it's the start of a slippery slope. So I personally think it's a big mistake that the Law Society should even be contemplating things like that. By all means, say if people want to make personal decisions about how they set their will up, well, that's fine. But don't, whatever you do, try and give any kind of legitimacy to Sharia, because it's inherently divisory and discriminatory, and it should have no place in our legal system at all. And that's true. Yeah, that's true when it comes to any other aspect of Sharia, that Muslims are now trying to push into a Sharia finance, and the British government is falling in line with that. But that is going to, then again, that's going to be another way of normalising an inherently barbaric system, and trying to say, We'll start to come round to the feeling that in some ways this barbaric system is somehow equivalent to British law, which has been built up over hundreds of years, and which is actually, you know, despite some of the quirks that you might see from time to time, it is pretty fair. And in most circumstances, it's the most fair outcome for most people. And if you start introducing Sharia law, which is inherently unfair to women and minorities, then that is a backward step, and it shouldn't be tolerated at all, not in the slightest.
And I'll point out here...
I was going to say, Agatha, just before, I just wanted to mention what said in the chat, and I would agree with him as well. He said, the Dan American Sharia Court announced a public execution. I'll be there with my rifle to stop it. And I think Vorp speaks loudly of a lot of good people in America about this situation. And this is how it makes you. You don't want this sort of this barbaricness, because that's what it is, isn't it? It's totally barbaric. And they're trying to say that we might invest in some of the Sharia, we might be trying a little bit compliant to some of the issues with Sharia. But as you say, Tim, once they open up, that can of worms, I mean, this just leads down to a slippery path, because we know with Islam, it's not just about taking a little bit, they're about taking it all. And that's exactly what they would try to do. Any way to achieve their goal, which is Islamic domination of the free world. And everything that we know about our freedoms and everything that's afforded to us is the thing that they hate and detest so much. They hate democracy. They hate everything that we stand for. We, the free people of the world. And it's our goal to keep the things the way they are. We love our freedom. We love our democracy. And we will fight to the death to preserve that for the goodness of our future and future generations. So there you go. That's the way I look at it. This is, as I say, this is very much a serious issue now. And we are really, we're stepping it up a bit, guys. We've got to, haven't we? We've really got to bang this drum, because you know, these politicians, if they're not listening, we know what we're going to have in a very short while. It's going to be horrific on our streets. And I mean, just not the streets of the UK, but I'm talking right away across Europe. This could be like a tinderbox ready to go, couldn't it, if we don't stop it. And we can. As Tim said, we've still got time. And sorry, Kerry, you want to come in. Go on.
Oh, sorry. No, I was clearing my throat. I'm sorry. But we do have somebody joining us on the line, Jeff, and this is moving forward, and he has some breaking news regarding Pastor Saeed Abedini, and I was wondering, do you want to bring him on?
Yes, please, Kel. Yes, please. Let me see. That's the... yes, moving. Welcome to the show, brother. You've got some breaking news for us this evening, and good to have you here.
Well, yeah, hey, Jeff and Kellen, everybody, this is moving.
Hi, so, moving.
I'm still moving. I'm still moving.
Brother.
Still moving.
good on
hey,
you.
I've been, you know, watching the Operation American Spring folks pretty close. Been in D.C. since 6 a.m. Friday, most days, skipped Wednesday and today to resupply and get some food and be back at it either later tonight or tomorrow morning, still on the fence on that. And,
great job.
But germane to, I still got to participate with Camp Liberty today, all my buddies there to take the grocery list and also... they have an 8 o'clock, 8 to 10 prayer session led by Dr. Wiley Drake, who's the OAS chaplain, and Colonel Riley and Chaplain Drake, Dr. Drake, were in contact. And let me back up a minute.
Just give us a little bit of a backstory as to who Pastor Saeed Abedini is. The major media
reported about the gentleman, the pastor, Saeed Abedini, and I learned my pronunciation in Spongistan, so please don't pardon my pronunciation, okay? What's going on is, you know, he's a pastor who is in prison in Iran, and he's been there for a couple years. And this strikes at the core of what EDL is conveying and what's being, you know, concerns in Canada and the U.S. and Australia and everywhere. The poor man, he's been sick. He's a younger pastor, you know, and he's got two small kids and a wife and parents. And his parents went to see him in the hospital. And when his parents were there, what happened was, and the news reported this Tuesday, but I'll give you an update. You know, the news reported his parent said that he was, you know, beaten and taken away, you know, pretty much that. But they also reported it was unconfirmed, like on, I think, Fox News and some other stuff, because I went and backtracked and got the history. But this morning at 4:30 Eastern time, that would be, oh, dark 30 Greenwich Mean Time, right?
Yeah.
The parents talked to Colonel Riley and Pastor Drake this morning and said, you know, the family said, not that he was, you know, beaten and taken away. They tasered him. They tortured him. They beat him, and they dragged him away because he was a Christian pastor out of a hospital. Out of a hospital. They did this.
Well, that's shocking.
My gosh, we were told this at the end of, you know, a couple hours of prayer today, you know, at the end of the prayer session today. And we were just all taken aback. I mean, those at Camp Liberty and those participating with prayer in the air, we were, you know, we didn't know what to say. Because for the past few days since, well, this group has been doing it for months, but, you know, since Friday, we've been praying for healing of people's differences. We've been praying for America. We've been praying for the whole world to, you know, just we've been praying for our leaders, and we've been praying for the truth. And just for Tim's sake there, I've been praying that, you know, our own leaders here wouldn't practice Takiyah. And people are starting to hear about Takiyah and what that is. So thank you, Tim, for that.
Yeah.
And so that this is all real and truth.
What can I say, Moving? Absolutely
not,
horrific.
They tortured a pastor. They tasered him. They tortured him. They dragged him away. And you know, if that happened in our countries in the West to a you know, someone who is, you know, Muslim,
There'd be riots on the streets, wouldn't there, Moon? Let's be honest. If anything like that happened to a Muslim in a prison, you can see the way there's a big witch hunt goes on, and the Muslims would be rampaging, there'd be cars overturned, there'd be people killed. We know the situation. It seems, you know, that the Christian in people, we don't do things like that. We don't go on the streets rioting and things like that. We know this is totally evil. We're not surprised that this sort of thing's happened to that poor pastor. Because, as I say, Islam is a totally evil persona that we've got out there. And, of course, it's the Christians and other good people, Buddhists, Hindus, who come under the attack of these people. And we understand that. It is a persecution. It's been going on for a long time. And it seems like it is, it's really coming to... It does. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to think that, you know, a person for their faith has been tortured and persecuted for believing in the true God, not no false evil entity which they believe in. Which is very sad.
And Jeff, not to interrupt, I know you've got to finish your show. I just want to leave with one point, and that is, you know, Colonel Riley is 77 years old, and Pastor or Dr. Drake, Chaplain Drake, is, you know, he looks like he's 112, but he has the energy of a 12-year-old. I've never seen anything like it in my whole life. And these senior distinguished gentlemen, you know, why are they the ones at 4:30 in the morning addressing these topics? Where's our leaders right now addressing this? That's just a question. And hey, thanks for letting me move and call. And God bless the
moving. I've got to thank you. Always, it's a pleasure to take your call. I'm so sorry about the circumstances of
thank you, brother.
What we've heard this evening with the past. And my thoughts and my prayers go out to himself, his young family, and, of course, his parents. And
I have a clip if you want me to play it.
Oh, yes, please, Claire. And thanks once again, Moving, for calling in tonight,
take care
as
now.
Usual. It's God bless you, brother. Take care.
Thanks,
Thank
Moving.
You, Kel.
Here we go. Let me just buffer it up. Okay, here we go.
Now, the U.S. pastor jailed in Iran, Saeed Abedini. We're now hearing the Christian pastor has been returned to one of Iran's more infamous prisons after being beaten and forcibly removed from a hospital. That's according to family members who visited him in Iran. He's been held there since 2012. But Nagma Abedini is the pastor's wife. Jay Sekulow is the chief counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. Jay's been trying to bring this man home. And Nagma has been, well, she's been with us from time to time over the past year, you know, updating us on the plight of her husband. He was in the hospital because he has a serious medical condition. So why was he taken back to this jail? And what are your family members telling you?
Well, we were hoping that him being in the hospital was a step closer to his release, but unfortunately his family was with him when there was at least 50 guards in the hospital. There was more outside and van taking him and brutally taking him, beating him, throwing him in the elevator, electrifying him. He collapsed, and they took him back to Rajshahi Hospital. They were very worried about his health. He is all bruised up, hurt. And it's even worse. His condition is even worse than when he went to the hospital a few months ago.
What help are you getting from the administration to bring your husband home?
You know, when I heard the news, it was a harder blow than the first time. The first time his family didn't see him beat up. He got beat up once he was taken to prison, but it was a harder blow. And my first thought was 2 years of just talking about it, talking to our administration, talking to in our Congress, different governments around the world, and it's been 2 years, and there doesn't seem to be any positive movement, at least. And just not, you know, it's hard. What's next? I don't know. I've had a lot of support. Thousands of people have been messaging me. They've been calling their government officials in their state. They've really surrounded me with their love, their prayers, their support, and doing what they can. But, you know, ultimately, it's a hard place to be at for me and his family. We don't know what's next. And it's hard to see anything positive coming, moving forward. My trust is in God, and I know God is in control, and he will deliver my husband, and that's what's keeping me going and giving me hope.
I apologize for the interruption. What is the incentive for Iran's government to keep your husband?
Well, you know, Bill,
you know,
I've
they mentioned
about
some things. I think they're waiting.
Go ahead, Nadia.
Yeah, I think Jay can answer that.
Jay? Sure. Bill, I think part of this is a little conversation. Even the conversation came up during when he was being removed about the Iranian nuclear talks. I hate to think that Saeed has become a pawn in the political process and debates going on with regard to the P5+1, but, you know, that may be the case. It's hard to believe that an American citizen is still in jail 2 years now when we're sitting down with the Iranians on a regular basis discussing the nuclear program, and we just can't get this American freed. It's hard to understand this step back. I was optimistic, frankly, Bill, and we were on your broadcast talking about it, when Saeed was moved from the prison to the hospital. We thought that was the logical confidence-building measure that governments engage in when you're about to see a release. I mean, they get him to the hospital, get him healthy, then there's a release. This was a significant setback yesterday. We don't lose hope. We're pressing the State Department to continue the pressure. But frankly, and Bill, I've been in conversations late yesterday evening and early this morning from people around the globe. The key to keeping Saeed Abedini alive is that there's still, it's because of what you all are doing, a large part of Fox, keeping this story out there is keeping him alive. Now, doesn't mean he's not going to get beaten, and he did, and I hate having to say that with Nagme on the set there. But the reality is, the more we talk about it, the better chance that he will again be free. We're not going to give up. We had that situation with Youssef Nardakhani. He was in jail for a couple of years. He was sentenced to death again in Iran, and ended up one day they just freed him. And I'm praying that that happens, and we're working hard for that result.
Let's hope, indeed. Nagma, thank you for your time, and Jay, thanks for coming back as well. Nasty delay in the satellite.
Thanks,
our apologies to both of you on that. He turned 34 2 weeks ago today. Let's get him home. Thank you, Nagma, and thank you, Jay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Wow.
Young man in his early 30s.
When you hear it like that, Kel, it brings it really home to you. He's a 34-year-old young man, and he's very poorly. And the way that he's been treated is totally inhumane. And what we was to be discussing on the show, that's the way that these people are towards a Christian pastor. And, yes, we'll keep the story alive, the show's like
and if,
this.
If I, if
and
I may indulge your listeners, Jeff, Nagma Abedini may be with Randy L. Noble, may be a guest on the Vito Esposito show Monday, June 9th.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Wow. That'd be a show that we will definitely be listening into. And as I say, my hopes and my prayers go with the family at this time. I mean, it's worrying times because, as you say, whether they're just keeping using him as a political pawn, I don't know. It's very sad, and what we talk about, this ideology of theirs is brutal and against everything that we believe, and it's so sad that this gentleman hasn't been released because he's done no harm apart from being a Christian, for goodness sake, because he's a Christian. He's been treated this way. I mean, what can you say? It beggars belief, doesn't it, that this is actually going as we talk, and the torture, you know, cattle prodding this gentleman, electrifying him. What are they doing? It was just totally inhuman. And you'd think there'd be a bigger outcry throughout the world of these people for the way that they treat another human being. But hopefully something will come in. We will keep it going, won't we, girl? And guys,
mm-hmm.
You know.
I'd like to mention
thank you so much for the soundbite there, Kel, from the and of course the update of the veto will have his wife on a show.
How dare he
sit
there and tell me how to run my fucking show? Oh, sorry. Was my mic on? Oh, Christ.
All right.
Yeah, your mic is on.
Somebody told me how to run my show.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I thought he was channeling me for a second there.
No. I thought I turned off the microphone, and I didn't. Oh, boy, I feel like such a butt.
If you guys are able to self-mute yourselves, it would be very much appreciated on my end, because when I mute you, I don't know whether you want to come back on or anything. But another update of a story that Jeff and I were covering on the EDR radio show, just to let you know that a Sudanese lawyer has filed an appeal yesterday for a woman who is being held in a Sudanese prison for refusing to announce her Christianity. This, of course, is Miriam Yehia Ibrahim, who is 27 and 8 months pregnant. There has been Amnesty International has a petition out there. You can just Google Amnesty International, sign the petition. We have 500,000 signatures at this point. Get this woman and her 20-month-old child out of that prison. She's in a same situation as a pastor, Abedini, and that she's being shackled and she's being treated brutally. Her son is very much in dire health because of the conditions of the prison in the Sudan. And so just to keep people apprised of that. And Jeff, we've got 5 minutes of talking points before we have to close out. So I was wondering, Tim, what do you think about this?
This is about the specific case of the Sudanese woman. That specific case, that's what you're asking
let's,
me, yeah?
That was kind of a sidebar on my part. My apologies. I threw two topics at you, Tim. But what do you think about Pastor Syed Abedini? That's where I'd like to concentrate.
Okay, well, I mean, there's no question that both these cases are in terms of what we would consider as breaches of human rights is only a mild, you know, it's a mild aspect of it. The brutality that is meted out to people in Islamic countries for simply not being of what they consider to be the appropriate religion is nothing short of barbaric. And it just goes to show that there are plenty of people out there who are trying to make the equivalence between the way that we do things here in the West and the way that things are done in Islamic countries. And there is no equivalence at all. We have a civilized, enlightened way of doing things, and they do not. When you treat people in that barbaric way, just because they, in the case of Pastor Abedini, he happened to be a Christian who came over to that country in order to do some humanitarian work, and he's been treated in the way he has because he's a Christian. I mean, that's a pretty awful thing on two levels. If he'd come over there to get up the noses of the authorities and they didn't like what he was doing, well, all right, that's still not a great thing. But the fact is, he came over with the best of intentions to help the people in that country, and he's being treated appallingly as a result. So that's one thing. But the case of the woman in the Sudan, well, again, you've got Islam at work here. No tolerance at all for any other religion apart from Islam. And this woman was deemed to be somebody who married, let me think. She was supposedly, she says she was brought up a Christian and she married a Christian, but that's being disputed, as I understand it. And the authorities are treating her as if she was a Muslim who married a Christian, and is therefore that breaks the terms of Sharia law in as much as Muslim women are not supposed to marry Christians, and that's why she's being treated in the way she is. And it's nothing short of barbaric. There she is. She's 8 months pregnant. She's facing being lashed, followed by execution by hanging. And there at the moment, there's plenty of people out there who are still willing to give Islam a free pass on that, and they're saying, well, at least she's not going to be executed until the child's been born. That makes it all right then.
She's got to wean it first.
Well, yeah, so I think it's 2 years old, so she has 2 years before the child is taken off her and she's executed. But, I mean, does that make it less barbaric? No, of course it doesn't.
No, it doesn't, Jim. It's the whole thing of whatever the situation was, a Muslim marrying a Christian guy, and as you say, under Islamic law, a Sharia law, she's deemed apostate and the sentence of death because of that. I think it shows what Islam is all about, is what we discuss in these shows week in, week out. That shows no tolerance towards any other faith. Anybody that, she married a Christian gentleman. I think the thing was, she married a Christian guy, and he's absolutely going to, he's in despair, that poor gentleman. And I don't blame him. This should never happen to any human being. And as I say, all the time we got this ideology out there, it will continue to do these things until we totally eradicate this evil. Because that's what it is, pure and utter evil. Ladies and gentlemen, and I feel very strong on this. I really do, because these stories that come out, it wrenches your heart, doesn't it, Tim? Kyle?
Well, it does, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Jeff, in that it is pure and unmitigated evil. There is such a thing as good and evil in the world, despite what people on the left have to say about cultural relativism and telling us that because of multiculturalism we shouldn't judge. Well, I think that's... what's the word I was looking for? Oh, yeah, bollocks, that's the word. And I think that...
You've got a choice with words.
there is such a thing as good and evil, and we should judge. We should not be afraid to stand up and say Islam is pure and unmitigated evil. There is no place for it in the civilized world. Quite honestly, there's no place for it on the planet. But let's start with the civilized world and work out from there, and then hopefully we'll get a chance to eradicate it from the entire planet in due course. But we cannot allow it to continue in civilized countries with people pretending that it is in some way equivalent to or some way as good as Judeo-Christian civilizational morals and ethics, because it isn't. It's completely inferior, and we don't need it in our countries, and we should do everything we can to get it out and make sure it never comes back. And
I was going to say thank you, Tim. We are running a little bit short now.
Turn it over to you, Jeff.
But I've got to thank you for your sentiments tonight and to everybody. Kel has been such a busy lady this evening with the slides and the clips and that. Thank you so much, Kel. We've been at your style tonight. To everybody that's listening to the show, everybody in the chat room, it's been amazing. Some of the topics and issues that we've been discussing tonight have been very varied, and as I say, I hope you've enjoyed what we've done tonight. And we'll be back again this Sunday. We've got a special show this Sunday, haven't we, Kel? And not forgetting,
oh, we do
tonight.
Do we ever?
Before we go, Kel, you've got a show tonight, haven't you? You've got a show that
normally the Red Fox blogger flies solo on Friday evenings, but I have begged on the favors of Tim to stay up a little later tonight to join me, because we are going to be interviewing Dr. Pastor Terry Jones and dealing with his court case in which he was charged with transporting kerosene-soaked Korans with the intention of burning them. This is the gentleman that caused a firestorm in the Middle East and riots in Afghanistan in particular. So Tim and myself will be interviewing him, and that will be a reprise show at our other show, and that is the Freedom Loving Infidels on the Radio Jihad Network. So that's what Tim and myself are up to tonight, Jeff.
Well, there you go, guys, and this is a great. Did Kel and Tim have a great show this evening? And I've just had that lady, she's whispered in my ear, okay, we've got 90 seconds. So I'd like, Agador, once again, thank you so much for being here, part of the panel tonight. Tim, as usual, superb.
You're welcome, brother.
Tonight. Yeah. And Carol, as usual, a great job. God bless you guys. You're fantastic. And to all our listeners out there, you take care. You stay safe. God bless you all. And not forgetting from myself, from Kel, from Tim, from Agador, from us all, no surrender. No surrender ever.
No surrender ever.
No surrender ever.
We're going underground. All right, I've got the right plan here, Kel. Here we go. Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Jeff.
Might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the flags.